You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of August 15th, 2017, and episode number 326. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, the doctor is in. A couple of messages real quick. First, I want to wish a very big happy birthday to my buddy, Jay Baterchin. Today's his birthday. Kind of weird. It's on my show, but well, knowing him, he's probably not listening. He's probably celebrating his birthday on Bray Road, looking for the Beast or looking for Bigfoot in one of his southeast Wisconsin hideouts. And also, I think it was Eric Altman's birthday a few days ago. I can't remember what day it was. And I know he's a listener. So happy birthday, guys. Two of my favorite guys in cryptozoology. Another real quick thing. I don't normally do this kind of stuff, but I do want to say I want to give a big woo to Ric Flair, the Nature Boy. It's so weird. I grew up loving wrestling, but I really haven't watched since the WCW went under. They got absorbed by WWE, and I've seen a number of wrestlers die over the years, including a few this year. And again, I don't really watch this stuff anymore, and I know it's fake. Well, sorry, I hope I didn't ruin it for anybody, but it's sad to see these people, you know, your childhood heroes, your little idols that you had when you were younger, or, you know, just stuff that you kind of spent your time with friends growing through your high school years or whatever. And just to see these people, you know, dying one by one, it's pretty depressing. But there was a bit of a scare yesterday when I saw a story that he was in a coma, and I wasn't sure if it was legitimate. There's a lot of fake stories out there, and as a researcher, I had to do the work and find out if it was true. And apparently it was true. And he was suffering from kidney failure and had emergency colon surgery, which was successful. But he's still in critical condition. So fingers crossed and thinking of the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, tonight. Well, tonight, we're talking paranormal stuff, not wrestling. This isn't a wrestler's hour. This week's news includes more reports flowing in on the Chicago Phantom, a Bigfoot 911 in North Carolina, and a part two to that particular story that even I never saw coming. It's really weird. It's out there. Trust me. You're going to want to listen to that one. And Chupacabra is on the loose in South Carolina. We'll see if we can wrangle him up just in time for the show. And watch out for an increase in cryptids during the Great American Eclipse. We'll also talk about an auditory hallucination study. Yeah, I like science. Talk about that. And we'll also talk, speaking of science, we're going to talk a little bit about the eclipse as well, since it's a big deal. It's going to be less than a week away next Monday. You know, I mentioned it on the show a few weeks ago, and a lot of people had never even heard of this or hadn't heard that it was coming. And you'd have to be living in a cave pretty much not to have heard about it by now. And this week's news is brought to you by Chum Bucket Studios. Chum Bucket Studios offers professional, high-quality digital products from prints to movies, printing, signs, videos, video editing, even website graphics, and much more. It all begins with a little imagination. Check them out today at chumbucketstudios.com. Chum Bucket Studios recently helped me out with a new logo to my new cryptozoology group, Ohio Cryptid. And Jay Baterchin was a great communicator and listened to my input and delivered a high-quality product in a very timely manner. Again, chumbucketstudios.com. And this next check better not bounce, Jay. Just kidding. What do we have? Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator is my latest book, and it's now available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So check that out. Look for that. And you can also check out all my books. You can go to paranewsinsider.com, and on the front page there's a paragraph, and it talks about myself. And it says where it says 6 books. If you click that, it goes to a link where you can look at all my books, including the cryptozoology book. Sent one of those out to Jonathan Downs today. Pretty cool. Let's see. What else do I have here? Scrolling. WCJV has an app. Yes, there is an app for this. Any iOS device, iPhone, iPad, as well as for your Android devices. And you can listen into the show live or archived or be involved in chat and hang out with Dita. So go to the App Store or the Google Play Store, depending upon what you have. Well, after the show's over, don't do it now. You're listening to the show, right? So do it later. And WCJV is now on iHeartRadio as well as iTunes. And yes, the Paranormal News Insider has been available on these and many other podcast sites. But now you can hear the whole lineup of WCJV on the biggest platforms out there for podcasting. And WCJV is also available on SoundCloud, MixCloud, YouTube, and probably a lot of other platforms as well. And speaking of listening to the lineup, Thursday, September 7th, Arcane Radio is coming to WCJV. Join Lon Strickler, Sean Forker, and Butch Witkowski as they take you for a journey to the mysterious, the obscure, the arcane. On Arcane Radio, starting September 7th at 10 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss it. I know it's going to be late. I'm going to have to get my beauty sleep. But maybe I'll take a nap. And one thing I definitely want to talk about coming up this Saturday, August 19th, I will be speaking at the Goose Project MS Fundraiser Paranormal Convention, which is at the Bell Nursing Home in Kimballton, Ohio. And if you're interested in going there, check out thegooseproject.com. That's thegooseproject.com. I'm not spelling com for you. That's C-O-M, by the way. I guess I will. You could find out information about that event. It's if you want the address, I'll just give you the address. 309 Main Street North in Kimballton, Ohio. And hopefully I'll see you there. And I'll be heading down there with fellow WCJV show host Colin Schneider, as well as my wife. She'll be tagging along, selling some Bigfoot and Sasquatch cookies or cupcakes. I don't know what they are. They're going to be good. I'll probably eat them all anyway. And I hope to see you there. Now, just released, I think it was last night, a schedule of speakers. 10 a.m. to 10:40 a.m., Adam Bonnet will be talking about investigating without limits. 10:50 to 11:30 a.m., Brendan Shea from PPRS, investigating the private residence. That's a good one. 11:40 a.m. to 12:20 p.m., Stephanie Bingham will be talking about living with the dead. Living with the dead. And from 12:30 to 1:10 p.m., I will be talking about a balanced look at cryptozoology, research, and investigation. 1:20 to 2 o'clock p.m., Christopher Maggard talks Chasing the Haunt. And from 2:10 to 2:50, Daniel Clays talks about excavating the notorious Hinsdale House. And from 3 to 3:40 p.m., the Haunted Housewives we'll talk science versus spirituality, a paranormal debate. And the headliner for the show, closing it out from 3:50 to 5:30 p.m., Michelle Bellinger will be talking psychic self-defense. And at 5:45, there's going to be a raffle drawing. Hang out for that. There's also a ghost hunt afterward. And if you haven't got your tickets for that, I believe it's completely sold out. But come join us anyway. Come join us at the convention. There's going to be a lot of great stuff you're going to learn. Hang out with the speakers. hang out with all the vendors that are going to be there as well, selling all kinds of gadgets and crystals and who knows what kind of gadgets and things, all kinds of cool stuff. I know a couple of vendors that are going to be there, and they would really appreciate you coming down. And also, this is a charitable event. So if anything, come down and spend a little money to help out multiple sclerosis fundraiser here down in Kimbolton, Ohio. And it got a lot of news to cover, so I'm going to just jump in right here. Both feet. Let's go. Ready? Let's go to Chicago. What do you say? Chicago Phantom. If you haven't been paying attention, yes, this is a huge story. This has been going on for quite a while now, a good chunk of this year already, and it's picking up steam pretty much. I mean, geez, there was four or five stories last week. We got a handful this week as well. Three. Nothing. I didn't see anything pop up today too much, but I don't know. Last week it was down to the wire. A story popped in just before I went on the air. But this week, a couple of stories I want to share. Just kind of briefly go through these. But the Chicago Phantom, flying humanoid, bat, owl, mothman, whatever you want to call it. There's a million things here. Chicago Phantom is the name given to it by Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters. And this particular story stems from an email received by Lon Strickler back on Thursday, August 10th. The witness was born and raised in Chicago, but now lives in Washington, D.C. With her husband. And the couple was in town recently visiting her parents and were walking back to a condo when they saw the large black creature flying about 20 feet off the ground. The creature flew up the side of a building before coming back down to about 5 feet above the sidewalk and no more than 25 feet in front of the couple. The witness stated that several people on the other side of the street could be heard screaming, and they saw at least one flash from a camera. After 10 nerve-wracking seconds, the creature suddenly shot back into the sky and disappeared out of sight. Scary. I don't know what I would do in that situation. Kind of, I don't know. Spooky stuff. Second story here. Another report was received by Manuel Navarrete on Saturday, August 12th. A woman who claims to work for the city of Chicago saw what she described as a large owl flying out over the lake for about a minute. She states that these sightings have not gone unnoticed by the city hall, but the powers that be do not want to jeopardize the waning summer and scare away potential tourists to the area. Huh. I don't know. That's interesting. I've heard a little bit of this covert, I don't know, kind of undergroundish stuff that the police are being hush-hushed and the city is being hush-hushed, not wanting to induce panic. I don't know. I guess it kind of makes sense, but you'd think that you'd want to get people to look up, to look out, to maybe see this thing and report it, and potentially we could figure out what it is and maybe study it. And I don't know. I don't want to see it. If it is a real creature, I certainly don't want to see it in a zoo or in a body bag or anything like that. But I think it's I don't know. It's kind of, I guess you could say it would be irresponsible to induce panic, but it's also kind of irresponsible to not warn the public of something potentially dangerous out there, and to figure out, you know, a way to kind of curb any potential conflict with the citizens of Chicago. I think that's kind of a something that they should think about as well. So another Chicago Phantom report was released yesterday, Monday, August 14th. And this report dates back to March 16th of this year, where the witness was walking their dog when they heard something fly overhead. The witness then saw a large creature perched on top of a roof of a house close to where they were walking. And as the witness got closer to the house, I don't know why you'd do that, but the creature suddenly shot up in the sky and then disappeared behind the house. Yeah. I don't know. Some of these stories are a little weird. It's a little wacky. I don't know if I would do some of these. I mean, for me, yeah, I'd probably be frozen in fear or just frozen trying to figure out what this thing was. But like, a lot of people are drawn to this And this has been an ongoing theme throughout all these sightings dating back to all the way back to February of this year. And obviously there was three more reports prior to that dating back into 2011. And people seem to be drawn towards this thing for some reason. I don't know. It's pretty scary. So now the Google map created by Lon Strickler has 36 sightings. 36. Again, going back to 2011, with three of which occurring back in that time frame. And again, if you've had that link, you've seen it shared on Phantoms and Monsters. If you go to any of the links of any of these individual reports, at the bottom of which you will find a link to the whole map, and you'll see all the pinpoints on the map, and those are in sequential order of reports received. It's not in sequential of the actual sightings. It's just in when they're received. So, you know, that makes sense. Personally, I've been kind of looking at them from date of occurrence myself, just kind of looking for any sort of patterns here, but nothing. Nothing that I see. Interesting, though, that some of these are multiples happening in the same spot. So multiple witnesses in the same spot is kind of a golden thing that you want to happen in any kind of anomalous sighting like this, whether it be a UFO sighting or cryptid sighting like this one. You want multiple witnesses in the same location at the same time so you can get a variety of angles and looks and possibly some people taking some pictures, which has been alluded to a number of times. We've seen one taken from a Best Buy store parking lot that, really didn't yield much in the way of visual evidence. But nonetheless, the story continues. So if you're in the city of Chicago, visiting Chicago, keep your eyes in the skies and look out for those bat wings. I have to admit, though, you know, as intriguing as the Chicago Phantom story is, this next story is intriguing, but not as intriguing as the solution to this potential one. This is just a remarkable story, the way this thing kind of unfolded in the last few days. And let me just, I'll get started with part one here. It's just part one of a two-part saga of strangeness. That's the only way I can talk about it. But first off, a group that calls itself Bigfoot 911. Why? I have no idea. They were out in the woods, out in McDowell County in western North Carolina back on Friday, August 4th. John E. Bruner of the group posted on their Facebook page that the group had, quote, hit pay dirt, unquote, and detailed the sighting of the legendary creature of Bigfoot. And the group apparently had put out some glow sticks. Glow sticks? Were they having a rave? I don't know. They heard something approaching the area when Bruner got his sighting, and he said, quote, the angle of the moon was shining straight down on the road, and something big stepped into view. I turned my headlamp on, and I saw a large bipedal animal covered in hair. It took one step into the woods. Then I took off running toward where it went back into the woods, unquote. I was trying to make that dramatic. At this point, Bruno was able to get within 30 yards of the creature and was able to describe it. And he said, quote, its face was solid black with no hair on it, unquote. He said, quote, the hair looked shaggy all over its body. It turned and took five steps and was at the bottom of the hill, probably 30 yards. I could see the gluteus maximus flexing with each step, unquote. Gluteus maximus flexing with each step. That's like the quote of the year so far. And this is just part one of two parts of the saga of strangeness. So remember that quote there, that he could see the gluteus maximus flexing with each step. Just keep that in your mind. That's all I'm telling you. The group says it tried to track it, being Bigfoot, but saw no more signs of the creature. but later on in the night, something had been throwing rocks at them. Now, was this definitive proof of Bigfoot? I don't know. Sounds pretty legitimate. Yeah, it's the butt. If you don't know what a gluteus maximus is, it's your posterior. It's your butt. Right. So, this is, most stories are pretty easy for me to read and to talk about and to kind of give you information for. This one here, this is, I don't know, it's almost a little difficult here. So let me just get through this thing. This is a little ridiculous here, but this is part two. And they say that there are always two sides to every story. In the previous story, it might sound interesting or even a bit fishy due to some of the details, but that's nothing compared with what supposedly happened. View of the Bigfoot. That's right, from the Bigfoot. Gawain McGregor, age 36, resides in Minnesota and has a goal of connecting with Sasquatch in a spiritual level. McGregor has essentially combined his Christian beliefs with shamanistic approaches in an effort to connect to an Enkidu. Enkidu. I don't know what it is. I heard Enkidu. I don't know what it is. It's a central figure in the ancient Mesopotamian epic of Gilgamesh, or essentially Sasquatch, I guess. Enkidu. McGregor was recently visiting eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina last week, practicing his rituals. A large part of this includes what he states, quote, as a practitioner of Enkiduism, whatever he practices, that's pretty strange. Enkiduism. The foremost sacrament I practice is the wearing of hair-covered animal skins and wandering the forest, the same way that Gilgamesh honored him thousands of years ago. While this may seem unusual, the practice actually dates back to long before Gilgamesh, as images of shamans dressed as animals appear as far back as the Neolithic paintings in France's Trois Frères cave. Even today, there are hundreds of shamanistic traditions around the world that involve dressing in a similar way. To join this ancient lineage and to honor Enkidu, I sewed animal hides together, fabricating my own ritual garments. Unquote. Well, it's true. The research is there, folklorish stuff, but he's right. A little weird, but he's right. Well, after dressing up in his raccoon skins, McGregor enters a deep trance where he describes in his blog, quote, to become possessed by the spirit of nature and opening communication with the individual elements around me, unquote. One of my favorite parts of the story, at McDowellNews.com, is that they show what McGregor calls the Sasquatch prayer that he says allows him to view more Sasquatch since his initial sighting. And the prayer reads, quote, hear me, O Sasquatch, children of Enkidu. In your great mercy, may you walk forever before me, guiding me through the forest and guarding me from every danger that may come. Unquote. Now, I've heard a lot of prayers and protection things and all sorts of stuff. I've never heard anything for Sasquatch ever. And I'm going to be sure to use this the next time I'm out squatching. That's for sure. Maybe not. McGregor states that it was him who the Sasquatch 911 group came across in the woods in North Carolina, and that it was no coincidence. No coincidence that he happened to be there and they happened to see Bigfoot at the same time. I don't know. Maybe they were seeing the same thing. I don't know. Shared delusion, or maybe it was him and neither one of them really saw Bigfoot. Because that's kind of what he's admitting here. It's kind of one thing that I thought of. If McGregor states that this group saw him, they didn't really see Bigfoot, then he really didn't see Bigfoot when he was in the forest. And your prayer doesn't work. Anyway, details, schmetails, right? He also states that he moved away from the group when he noticed them But he never threw rocks at them. He probably felt a little awkward when one of them was staring at his butt. I don't know. I would feel a little awkward trouncing around in raccoon skin in the woods and people were staring at my butt. I think I would run away as well. It's interesting that both groups were in search of Bigfoot. In this regard, I think this is really interesting. They were both using vastly different means, but, you know, looking for the same thing. You know, and there's what they say in ghost hunting. There's no wrong way to do it. I guess there's no wrong way to look for Bigfoot. Actually, there is a wrong way to look for ghosts, but I don't have time to talk about that tonight. And I guess you never really know what you're going to find in the woods. My goodness. I think, you know, I think that's the last time I ever go in the woods by myself. Really, really do. Yikes. Anyway, moving on. Let's go to from North Carolina down to South Carolina in search of the elusive Chupacabra. A man named Doug Stewart was playing golf at the Santee Cooper Country Club when he spotted a strange hairless creature. He also took a bunch of pictures, and he posted those pictures of the creature on Facebook with the hashtag, "That ain't no dog." The photos were shared well over 1,500 times, well, the last time I checked anyway, and have led many to speculate that this is in fact a living, breathing chupacabra. However, experts are chiming in, stating that this is merely a canine, either a coyote or fox with severe mange. And people hear this, they hear severe case of mange, and a lot of people automatically go to, oh, that's just like saying a UFO is swamp gas or a weather balloon. Well, okay, not really. As you've heard on the show, sometimes UFOs really are weather balloons. And more often than not, these chupacabra really are coyote or fox with severe case of mange. It's true. We've also seen a raccoon with mange, severe mange, that was mistaken for a chupacabra. And, you know, people shoot these creatures, which in all reality is probably, it might actually be humane to do. Now, mange is a parasite that leads to hair loss. Sometimes massive hair loss is what we see in these chupacabras. Usually, they're not really chupacabra. Again, it's a fox or coyote or other animal. Usually, it's just spots of hair that are missing. And it's interesting to me. I think it's not about this chupacabra type of sightings. To me, it's what's going on with this mange. Why are we seeing such severe mange so often out there, or is it just something that we're looking for now because everyone's looking for the chupacabra, or they're thinking that they're seeing this? Now, this parasite that leads to hair loss can also lead to the animal dying of a secondary infection or starvation, which sadly happens quite a bit, and that's why these creatures turn up dead or are seen quite a bit, because they're, you know, they really have a hard time getting around. And again, shooting these things, a lot of people get all upset about it, but it's probably the most humane thing in some conditions, if the animal cannot be helped. You know, as cool as the story was, I've not been able to find any follow-up information on new sightings or anything else going on with this particular story. But I don't know. I'll keep my eyes peeled and see what I can see out there. For the elusive chupacabra. And I think Benjamin Radford, myself. Benjamin Radford, by the way, he wrote a book, Tracking the Chupacabra, and pretty much debunked the whole story. Yeah, covered that here, talked about it here on the show. And right now, I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And in case you missed it, Monday night was the Crypto Kid radio show hosted by Colin Schneider. And he had Tyler Houck, who discussed cryptids and cryptozoology. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experience with host Kat Hobson. She's going to be talking to John Helea, a hot rod enthusiast and paranormal investigator. How cool is that? Hot rod enthusiast. Awesome. That's Paranormal Experience with host Kat Hobson tomorrow night. And that will be at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Wednesday night. Again, right here on WCJVradio.com. And why heck, since he's in the chat room, big shout out to Jim Mallard. And you can catch his show, not on this network, The Mallard Report, 9 p.m. Eastern tonight, Tuesday night, at TMR247.net. Cool guy, great show. I know I could get in trouble for this. I'm talking about it on my network, but it's a great show, and I highly recommend checking it and out. Great show. Awesome show. Awesome. Cool dude, too. I think I've been on a show maybe twice in 10 years if he's been doing it. Anyway, just kidding, Jim. Great show. Lost my place. Where am I at? There am I at. There I am. So where were we? We were in North Carolina. Then we traveled down to South Carolina. And, well, let's stay in South Carolina for a second. So you can, don't put your seatbelt on yet. Hang on, kids. This is kind of getting into the, eclipse part of the show. I do have one more story. But you kind of want to talk about this. You've probably seen this. I thought this was really cool, kind of out there, really left field. Officials are warning of a potential spike in paranormal activity surrounding the upcoming total solar eclipse. What? The message was sent in the form of a tweet by the South Carolina Emergency Management Division and included a map that showed possible lizard man sightings from 1980 to 2001 within the border where the path of totality of the upcoming total eclipse will occur through South Carolina. Don't take it serious. It's just kind of more or less a joke. It's what they called a tongue-in-cheek tweet, and it's more or less a response to the map of Bigfoot sightings that went really viral that shows the entire map of purported Bigfoot sightings with the path of totality on it, kind of highlighted where the sightings of Bigfoot have been mapped out. And as well as the aforementioned stories on the Bigfoot sighting in North Carolina coming out, so it was a kind of a big deal in the media, and the Chupacabra sighting in South Carolina. So all that stuff that I just talked about added up along with this other tweet. And there it is. As the tweet says, as always, if you see something, say something. If you see something, say something. Take a picture of it for, I guess. And, you know, I wasn't going to do this, but I do have time. And I kind of was gunning for this story. I think this is really, really interesting. I love scientific stories, especially ones that border on explaining some stuff that we deal with in the paranormal. And I think this is really important, and this is kind of being undershadowed. I posted this through a couple of different sites of my own that I have, including my Ghost Help Facebook page. I didn't really get any response to it. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but it's an interesting study that was published in the journal Science, and it involves fooling people into hearing things, or in other words, having auditory hallucinations. Cut this link before I go too far. At his psychiatric clinic in the Connecticut Mental Health Center, Albert Powers sees people every day who experience hallucinations. The condition is often a hallmark of psychosis, occurring in an estimated 60 to 70% of people with schizophrenia, and in a subset of those diagnosed with bipolar disorder, dementia, and major depression. Auditory hallucinations are the most common type experienced. Some patients report hearing voices. Others hear phantom melodies. Wish I could have that. But increased evidence over the past two decades suggest hearing imaginary sounds is not always a sign of mental illness. Speaking in a study, Powers says about hallucinations, quote, may arise from an imbalance between our expectations about the environment and the information we get from our senses. You may perceive what you expect, not what your senses are telling you, unquote. Powers and his colleagues recruited 59 people to help them test that hypothesis. There were four groups of participants. First, people who had been diagnosed with psychosis but didn't hear voices. Second, people who heard voices but had not been diagnosed with any mental illness. And third, people who just plain didn't hear voices. Or I should say, no, that's really the second one there. People who heard voices but had not been diagnosed with any mental illness, and people who just plain didn't hear voices. The third group, 15 self-professed psychics. That's right, psychics. These participants said that they heard voices every day, but unlike people in the first group, those diagnosed with psychosis who heard voices, they weren't bothered by the voices they claimed to hear. In fact, they took them to be communications from supernatural forces or entities. Now, all the participants then underwent brain scans. While they were in the scanner, the researchers used a combination of sounds and images to trick their brains into producing auditory hallucinations. First, participants were shown a checkerboard and played a sound. Then they were told to listen for the sound. Sometimes it played when the checkerboard appeared. Sometimes it didn't play at all, but the checkerboard showed, which led their brains to expect the sound would be played. Members of all four groups experienced the hallucinations, hearing noises even in the silence. Their brain scans showed that they were really hearing the non-existent sounds, not really hearing as in their ears were working, but their brains were working, thinking that they were actually hearing these sounds. So they were tricked by visual stimuli into hearing things that weren't there. Now, unsurprisingly, the two groups of hallucination-prone people were more susceptible to hearing things, but when they were told they had in fact been no sound, people with psychosis were less likely to believe it. The authors say that this difference could potentially help doctors spot, diagnose, and treat psychosis in their patients before it becomes severe. The article that I just, most of what I just, I actually just read it off the thing, which I don't normally do that. I don't like doing that. The article appears on mentalfloss.com, and I'll throw that in the chat room. I'll also show that later on. I just really thought it was interesting and really hadn't had time to really process it into my own words. But one thing I want to add to this story is, could this suggestibility be a solution to psychic information? Or at least with EVP that people claim to hear during investigations. I mean, we're putting ourselves in a situation where the environment is ripe for our minds to be fooled. And a lot of what happens in an investigation of ghosts is our senses being tricked. That's one reason why traditionally back in the spiritualism era, mediums and psychics would turn off the lights because they were using apparatuses, bellows to create wind and strings and different things to pull, to make things move or touch people. All sorts of things were being used to fool the person into thinking they were experiencing something that they weren't. And again, the darkness was used back then to thwart those that were trying to discover their methods or to essentially just fool people. And we've kind of taken on that in a way, and we've rationalized it by saying, well, we have to turn off the lights for ghosts to appear. makes zero sense because you turn around and you say, well, you know, they need energy to appear because ghosts are just energy. And so turning off the lights, I don't know. Never made sense to me anyway. But again, we're tricking our emotions and our senses into creating these hallucinations. And it's there you go. There's the science for it. So that's something that ghost investigators, I think, really need to step back and take a look at this and, you know, maybe rethink the way that we approach things. And, you know, I've been doing that for years, 6 years ago when I came up with my E4 method. You know, I talked about in my book, talked about how lights can fool people. Sometimes it's good though, because it gets you in that mood, which you need the mood to kind of get things going at times. But, when it leads you to jumping to conclusions or making assumptions about what is going on around in the environment, that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing at all. And the other thing is, okay, we're turning off the lights to investigate in the dark, but we walk around with flashlights. Okay. Or other gadgets for lights. Anyway, I'm not going to stir that debate any further. I want to talk about the eclipse. What do you guys think? Anybody going out and seeing that? I don't know. They estimate a lot of people are going to be out there witnessing this live and, I don't know, going down wherever they're going and, and seeing this thing for real. I mean, I don't know. I kind of contemplated it. I remember seeing a partial eclipse years ago and, I guess, Audrey Hamilton, she's going to be down in Georgia. That's awesome. Northeast Georgia. I have to see that. But you know, this whole story, and again, I mentioned this weeks ago, if not months ago, talking about this because I knew this was going to be a big deal. And if you, if you haven't read too much about this, I'll try to summarize as much as I can here. Now we're less than a week away. Obviously this takes place Monday afternoon. Depends on where you're at. If you're, out west, it's going to be a little earlier. If you're out east or you're South Carolina, it's going to be a little later, in the afternoon. The Great American Eclipse. I guess it's got its name. The Great American Eclipse. That's what it's being billed as. It's the first total solar eclipse in the United States since 1979. That one only took place in part of the West Coast. And just to, again, some of these stories don't really explain things. So I kind of want to break things down a little bit for you guys. Not that you're not capable of understanding, but just to explain things because some of these sites get a little too sciencey. Now, a partial eclipse is one of three. There's three types of eclipses. Partial eclipse, and this is where the moon will only cover a portion, obviously, of the sun during its transition between the Earth and the sun. Now, this is what a majority of the United States will see if you're not in the path of totality. The second type of eclipse is an annular eclipse. And the annular eclipse is where the moon is actually too far from Earth, or the Earth is too far from the sun to, for the moon to cover the sun completely. So it kind of, even though it goes, there are ways to get to see the moon go directly in front of the sun. A good portion around it is still going to shine through because the distances just don't work out. And it's just a mathematical, it's just amazing. If you look at the math involved in how we can see this, it's actually really a miracle when you think about the distances involved. Now, I guess the third type, total eclipse. This is what we're dealing with here. In just a small area where the umbral shadow, which is the shadow created by the moon down on the Earth, will create this sensation of dusk for just a few minutes along a trail, again, called the path of totality. Now, this particular band, path of totality, is about 70 miles wide. And beyond that, viewers, again, will only see a partial eclipse. You're not going to see the total eclipse unless you're in that path of totality. And again, it's an amazing mathematical coincidence or miracle, depending upon how you look at it. The sun it's got a diameter roughly 400 times that of the sun, but it lies 400 times further. So when things are just right, the moon perfectly blocks out the sun. So the sun is huge, obviously. Sorry, did I read that wrong? 400 times that of the moon, but it's 400 times further from the moon. So it kind of cancels each other out. When we're here on this little rock, when the sun, when the moon goes in between us and the sun, it makes it perfectly disappear. Now, again, it depends on where the Earth and the moon are at this particular point in time, because it's we're not perfectly spinning around perfectly, nor is the moon spinning around the Earth perfectly. So it's, again, a mathematical coincidence or miracle of, no matter how you look at it, of what's going to happen on Monday. I mean, perfectly blocking out the sun. This is what a lot of people are freaking out about. And personally, I'm very excited. I'm actually going to have the day off, and I've made plans to make my way southward on Sunday afternoon. Kind of got a little, I don't want you to call it a base, but going basically camping on Sunday night. So I can kind of gauge the weather Sunday night and getting up Monday morning. I'll be within about 3 to 4 hours journey. No matter where I want to go along the line between of, I can go probably as far as Southern Illinois, Kentucky, or into Tennessee as well, through that path of totality. So I'm hoping, weather permitting, that I'll be able to see it, and really excited about that. I love astronomy. I love all those things, and just the experience alone. It's not about getting pictures or things like that. A lot of people have asked me, get some pictures, get a lot of pictures, go on Facebook Live, do this, do that. But a lot of other people said, you know what, if you're going to go, don't even bring your camera. Just go there and enjoy the moment. It doesn't last very long. The moon will start to block out the sun. You'll have a little bit of time before it completely blocks it out. But there's this little flash called the diamond ring. Once that diamond ring shines, you take off your glasses and gaze at the wonderment in front of you. And it depends on where you're at in this 70-mile wide path of totality. You may see it for a while. You may not see it very long. I mean, for me, in 2024, there's already known to be another total solar eclipse. And it's going to be going right through my backyard, literally. I'll be right in the middle of the path of totality. Actually, Cleveland is pretty much dead center of this path of totality. It's coming up from the south. But that one is scheduled for April 8th. And anybody who knows anything about the Northeast, April 8th, especially in Ohio, it's probably going to be snowing that day. So not going to gamble to wait another 7 years. Whatever you do, don't look at the sun. A lot of people are talking about this. They're going to use different things to look at the sun. This guy said, just poke a hole in a piece of paper and look through it. I'm like, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. It's not how any of this works. Now, if you're not in the zone of totality, the sun, again, will not be completely blocked. You're going to need those glasses, because even during a partial eclipse, you can severely damage your retina. And the one thing that people need to understand, your eyes do not have pain receptors. You're not going to feel it. But it will more than likely affect your vision in the years to come. How about those glasses? Many stores have been selling these eclipse glasses for weeks now. And if you have not gotten a pair of these, I won't be as mean as what I've seen other people say. Some people say, if you haven't gotten them by now, you don't really want them. They're everywhere. Go to the library. Go to your local library. Most libraries are giving them out away for free, but you better hurry, because these things are disappearing fast. And the closer we get to Monday, supplies are dwindling. And It's funny because you could have gotten a pair of these last year when I first heard about this big event. I think it was a little over a year ago. I contemplated buying them, and I thought, eh, you know what? They'll be everywhere. I'm not going to spend the 50 cents and the $2 shipping. That's ridiculous. Why would I pay that much? Well, now they're going for like 10 bucks and more. I know Walmart had them for a dollar, but probably most Walmarts are probably sold out, unless you're in the zone of totality. It seems like you ship more there than anywhere, which doesn't make sense. You're not going to need them there as much as you're going to need them if you're not there. There's also been a number of knockoffs of these glasses being sold. I know, I think Google or Amazon offered a refund recently for some that did not pass the safety checklist. For safety's sake, check these things out before using them the day of the eclipse. If you're not 100% sure, if you didn't get them from a library or you didn't get them from major retailers, Walmart, Target, a couple of other major retailers have gone through and made sure that they're selling the correct ones. Now, if you're wearing these glasses, you should not be able to see anything through them at all. At all. Until you look at the sun. Then you'll see a little glowing orange sphere in the sky. It's going to look small. It's going to look weird. Now, one bit of warning. Now, somebody who tried this, and they're partially blind now, don't use the glasses and then use binoculars to look at the sun. Think of the ant. Think of that poor ant with a magnifying glass. Yeah, that's what's going to happen to you. It magnifies the sun. Magnifies the heat. Not a good thing to do. Not smart. Now, these special glasses are designed to block harmful ultraviolet and infrared rays. And somebody else suggested using sunglasses, a couple pairs of sunglasses, 4 or 5 stacks of sunglasses. No, not enough. No matter how many you use, it's not enough. And don't use the CD. I remember back in, I think it was 1992 or somewhere about that, where I worked, there was one during the day, a partial eclipse, and people were running outside with CDs, looking through CDs. Not smart. Don't do that either. So the total eclipse will sweep from west to east. That's going from Oregon to Idaho to Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, and South Carolina. Again, along a 70-mile wide swath. The closer you are to the center of the path of totality, the longer the total eclipse will last. The longest duration will be occurring near Carbondale, Illinois. Definitely one place I am not going to go. That is going to be the most packed place. All the major news outlets, many, many scientists are going there, and it's going to be packed. That's the heart of the area. But unfortunately, if you do your homework and you do the research, you'll find out that Carbondale, Illinois itself is not the area for the longest duration, but an area near it. The partial eclipse will take about an hour, or I should say a half hour to 45 minutes prior, again, depending upon where you're at, and will last just as long after the total eclipse. Now, for those in the path of totality, the total eclipse will last anywhere from 50 seconds to a point in the Shawnee National Forest. Now, this is just south of Carbondale, Illinois, not in the city itself where everyone's going to be flocked, where the longest portion is 2 minutes and 44 seconds. Sounds like a long time. try to hold your breath for 2 minutes and 44 seconds. Not easy for most people to do, but when this event happens, it's going to go by so fast. It's just going to be just quick, too quick. It's going to be a beautiful sight to see. So you might wonder, well, okay, great stuff, Brian, but what does this have to do with the paranormal? Well, not only will there be a number of UFO sightings that day, I guarantee you, there's going to be all kinds of YouTube videos popping up, all kinds of people putting videos claiming that they filmed UFOs that day. Because again, a lot of cameras will be pointed towards the sky. which is another warning. Don't try to take pictures of the sun. You'll ruin your camera. A lot of conspiracy theory websites, hoaxers are going to be posting stuff about UFOs. But interestingly enough, and not surprisingly, there's also been speculation that this event will lead to the end of the world. Of course it will. Any celestial event that wows people usually does. And again, any scientific thing that most people don't understand usually does as well. I should say most people, some crazy people out there. The Great American Eclipse is said to be the precursor to the arrival of the planet Nibiru, which subsequently will smash into Earth 33 days later or on September 23rd. I guess you can kiss the Earth goodbye. Sure. Folks, it's just an eclipse. This happens all the time. It's a big deal here, but again, this happens quite frequently. It's been observed for centuries. And speaking of being observed centuries ago, a total eclipse centuries ago would have brought fear to those who witnessed them because they didn't really understand this stuff. In China, they would actually shoot arrows at the sun to make it catch fire again. In Europe, India, and other countries, it was thought that some sort of beast, a dragon, or other sort of monster was actually eating the sun. They would bang items together to scare it off, to scare this creature off. True. And some of these cultures still do this to this day. A total eclipse in eastern Turkey in 585 BC occurred during a war. The sight scared those who saw it so much that they decided to end the war right then and there. And I tell you what, people have been asking people that have seen these things that have traveled. It's said to make people, even who know what's going on, freak out quite a bit. And this is kind of I'm going for the kind of the physiological effect, maybe a little bit of the psychological stuff, just to witness this and just to feel what it's like to get freaked out by nature like this. This is probably the freakiest thing you can ever endure. The partial eclipse, when it starts to happen, probably all over the U.S., you're going to feel a little cool breeze. It's going to get a little cooler, and the sky will dim a little bit. And from the total eclipse, if you're in that region, it's going to become even cooler. Strange shadows are going to stretch across the landscape. If you see, this is one thing I'm going to do too. I'm going to be near trees. If there's any shadows from the sun going through trees, it's going to have little crescent shape reflections. It won't be, it's weird. This is weird stuff. And obviously you're going to see stars and planets are going to become visible, and it'll happen much quicker. If you've ever watched the sunset, you'll notice the stars and planets just kind of slowly appear. This is going to happen really quick in a matter of minutes. And they say that animals become confused. Birds will start singing songs. Crickets will start chirping. Orv weaver spiders will start tearing down their webs, which is what they do at night. And horses and cows are said to go back to the barns. And it's all kinds of weird stuff. Personally, I won't really have time for that because I'm not going to really be watching nature too much. I'm going to be listening for the birds, though. But there is I was going to talk about this too, but I don't have really, it's kind of a waste, and I don't recommend doing it. There's an app that you can become a citizen scientist and observe nature as all this stuff happens, and you can document it and contribute on iNaturalist. It's an app. But I thought about doing that, but I'm like, no, you know what? I'm only going to have like 2 minutes and 20 seconds if I get to where I want to go. In Kentucky, I'm not going to waste my time staring at my phone. I'm watching this. Maybe I'll go Facebook Live. I don't know. It depends on my setup and my feel and how everything's going. But really looking forward to that. And I hope that the listeners out there, you guys get a chance to get out there and see this for yourself. And speaking of all this stuff, this ties in with the book of the week this week. A book on eclipses? No, not really. It's actually a magazine. And this will give you a lot of great information if you're interested in the eclipse, even if you're not going to be able to see it, you don't have time for it or whatever, this is still great information about it, and to be able to understand what's going on, just as much as I've explained it here. Discover Magazine has a special edition for the month of September, and they have a special section inside of it that discusses understanding an eclipse and its mysterious spell. And it's where I got some of the information about the paranormal stuff, the strange things that people thought they saw in the sky or what was going on. It's kind of condensed stuff there, but if you look any of that stuff up on the internet, it kind of goes, some of these things go into detail. It's really cool to read about. It's interesting. And for me, I guess it's kind of one of the things I want to think of. That's why I'm talking about it, is that I want to remind myself what it was, you know, like back in those times to see something like this happen. And, again, you know, I've even heard people who have seen one, that say that they had to grab onto something because they thought that they were going to get swept away. And I don't know. I hope I don't get that woozy feeling, but, that's what I hear people get. So Discover Magazine, pretty good magazine. They got some decent stuff in here. Understanding an eclipse and its mysterious spells. On the front cover, you see an eclipse, a little boy standing up on top of a hill. I believe that's a 1992 partial eclipse. I don't think that was a total eclipse, if I remember correctly. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. This is a very cheap magazine, and I don't mean cheap as in it's garbage or it's good for lighting fires. You can get it on the newsstands for about $6. And I also have the link in the chat room for the Amazon link. You can get it on Amazon. It's $6.99 on Amazon. A little gouging. And I'm going to tell you right now, you probably want to get this quickly. $6.99 plus $4.99 shipping through Amazon. I don't think you can buy it through discover.com. I don't see a link here to buy it. Looks like there's a digital edition you can get, but I recommend going to the newsstands and getting it. And, it's going to be a collector's item. Pretty much, I'm telling you, it's going to be something that people are going to collect and look. And, hopefully you go out there. If you're going to go out there and look at the eclipse, again, be very careful. Get these sunglasses, these special glasses. Don't look at the sun, no matter how tempting it is. Again, unless you're in the path of totality and that the sun is completely covered up, and you'll see it. There'll be a little, kind of a little diamond ring, like a diamond ring shining, or they don't shine. They refract light. But anyway, you'll see this little bright thing. Then it's safe to look, and you only have a couple minutes at most. You'll be able to see the corona around it. My goodness, I just hope it's not cloudy where I'm going. My luck, it's going to be cloudy, but we'll see. Good luck to anybody out there who's going to go see this. I wish you the best, and I hope that you have sunny skies, at least until, you know, the time it is for that to occur. So there it is. Looking forward. This is great. This is going to be great stuff. But again, you watch how many UFO stories pop up. And with that, wow, it's already time to go, kids. It's time to say goodnight. Time to say goodbye for this week. But I want to remind you, I talked about events at the beginning of the show, and if you have any information about any event, paranormal conference, convention, anything involving the anomalous, and you'd like to hear about it here, as well as see it on the paranewsinsider.com website, let me know. Shoot me an email. People email anymore? I don't know. Insider at paranewsinsider.com. Go to paranewsinsider.com. There's also a form that you can fill out and send me a message. Big thanks, huge thanks to Cindy, my producer, and to Dita in the chat room for corralling everything. Don't see Paul. Paul's not there. Everyone else, thank you for listening to the show live or otherwise. And remember, you can listen to the Paranormal News Insider and the rest of WCJV Digital Broadcasting Network shows on the WCJV app, available on iOS and Android devices, where you can download at the App Store or get it on Google Play. And WCJV can now be found on iHeartRadio, iTunes, SoundCloud, MixCloud, YouTube, and a lot of other areas. You just got to look for it. And with that being said, as long as the Earth doesn't come to an end because of an eclipse, I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies and keep your glasses on and keep your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.